any harder, I'll blow my asshole out. Sweet Jesus, for all I know, I'm stewing in my own ass sauce right now. Listen to me, the captain said forcefully, cutting through the protest. You must surface. You must. There are other lives at stake here besides your own, younger lives. So awake, Augustus Berry. Awake. Gus shut his eyes and pushed, and the heavens crackled with lightning. Morning, Princess. Shovel stopped in the doorway of his bedroom, scowled, and swung a thunderous look at Giovanni, who smiled it off. How'd you get in here? Giovanni shrugged. Picked the lock. You picked my fucking lock? Uh-huh. You hairy bastard. I deserved that, then. Christ almighty, I didn't hear a fucking thing. Giovanni stood next to the door and inspected the aged leather of his cowboy boots. Jet lag? He asked. Yeah, fucking jet lag. Shovel grumped and deposited himself behind his desk, where a steaming cup of coffee rested. His face lightened considerably upon seeing and smelling the brew. We can't have too much more of this left. No, we don't, Giovanni said. Last of the instant, I do believe. Shovel saluted him with the mug and slurped noisily. What's happening this morning? Rouse the newbies, Giovanni reported. Got them fed and outfitted for the morning dig. Around 40 or so. Slick pics with them, showing them how things are done. Gonna be tight in that tunnel this morning. But once Pix showed them what to do, he'll send half back out. You got people on them? Oh, yeah, Giovanni replied. Course. And the minis ready, just in case. But I gotta say, looking over them new folks this morning, they looked ready to work. Excellent, Shovel said with approval, and took another harsh sip of coffee. You know, a few of these Pine Cove people were actually talking it up with our people on the way here. Seems we came along just in time. A revolt was just about to happen in that town. Heard about that myself from some of the boys. Slick Pick's already getting friendly with one of the women folk. Some folks are quick to see the light. Quicker the better. Think they'll punch through today? We'll know if they do. Giovanni didn't elaborate, and Shovel didn't press. They'd both discussed what would happen if and when their diggers broke through to the bunker. Practice drills had been conducted around that very event. Half the reason armed soldiers accompanied every shift was to protect them from the resulting zombies emerging from the hole. Whitecap was probably full of them. Infested, some even suspected. There were two plausible reasons for destroying the entry tunnel. To keep someone from escaping, and to deter folks like themselves from getting in. Based on that, they'd taken precautions and remained confident in their countermeasures for dealing with the undead. Once their diggers broke through, everyone would fall back while being covered by armed guards, and they'd exit the tunnel, double-timing it down the ramp. They'd lead any pursuing zombies into daylight and the miniguns situated on the flatbed just below the ramp. Allowing any undead to walk out of Whitecap made sense, so Shovel's forces could gun down the lot while they stumbled down the ramp, blasting every last ravenous monster and pushing their carcasses over the side into garbage bins. Much better than shooting them inside a pitch-dark tunnel and dragging their asses all the way out for disposal. By the way, I've doubled the guards as a precaution, Giovanni said. Seems some of them newbies been talking. They say Pine Cove had a pair of guardian angels. Real military types.
Huh. I didn't mention that before.
They mentioned it now, Giovanni said. Anyway, I've taken care of things. Countermeasures, just in case.
They didn't try anything while we were on the road.
Giovanni shrugged. Probably too many of you.
All right, Shovel said, filing that mystery away for later. Good move. See if anything happens.
Silence settled then. A morning quietness wherein Shovel slipped into his usual post-waking stare out the window.
Still one or two things to resolve, Giovanni began in a somber tone.
Yeah? What are those? Giovanni didn't dignify that with an answer, and Shovel didn't press him on it.
"What kind of person have I become?" Shovel asked slowly, steam issuing from his coffee. "To wake up on a sunny morning.
Near afternoon now."
"All right, afternoon. Wake up at almost afternoon and give the okay to put down my own brother. My last living brother. What kind of person would that make me?"
Giovanni looked up from his boots, eyes as cold as a weak dead rattlesnake stuffed into a freezer.
"Slick told me about the dust injection. The dust don't let people lie. Just brings out what they're thinking. Really thinking. Deep, deep down. And I'm thinking he'll be trouble. Potentially a fucking handful before he'll be a help. With that train of thought, I'm thinking, it's best to believe that your brothers, both of them, died a long time ago, in the past. This is the now, and that guy in the meat locker is a problem best solved with a bullet."
Shovel locked gazes with his right-hand man and had another mouthful of coffee, sinister in its silence. The sounds of Whitecap permeated the walls. Motors growled. Someone shouted to another and got an answer. Shovel brooded, sipped again, and leaned back in his chair, making it squeal. He turned his gaze toward the base of the mountain, his eyes dark and contemplative.
"Make it painless, then."
Giovanni waited for a moment before turning and opening the door. There stood Sick, masked in black.
"Do it," Giovanni ordered.
Sick lurched as he turned away, a golem of skin and bone set into motion. Giovanni closed the door and waited for Shovel to say something. But Shovel had returned to gazing out his window, drinking his coffee, lost in a morning stare. The beams of rechargeable flashlights poked and prodded at the wrecked darkness of the tunnel, illuminating debris consisting of rock, jagged slabs of concrete, steel pipes and beams, all coated with a thick film of dust. The soldiers moved forward first, guns leveled and ready. They crept past makeshift struts and nailed sections of chain-link fence that kept the walls and ceiling from collapsing. Things creaked. Disconcerting sounds of straining metal that made people pause and vacillate between running or staying. Dry decay wafted throughout, the smell of composted earth, and the air was warm. Warm enough to make Slick Pick perspire underneath his work overalls. He fiddled with the rifle's strap on his shoulder, adjusted the respirator mask on his face, and wished they had full helmets and proper gear for that shit. Who knew what chemicals might be in the air? He wasn't for this work, having been a house DJ in a previous life. But as a team leader, he had to take his turn in the hole with the rest of them, as much as he despised it. He swished his light about, scanning for movement, revealing a corridor wide enough for the backhoe to fit into. The original tunnel, before it was collapsed, had been much wider, enough for three lanes of traffic once cleared of all the debris. The diggers kept to the wall as they worked forward in a cone where the tip was no more than the shoulder width of two people. 10 paces behind the lead digger, the tunnel widened into the space of the backhoe's bucket. Pebbly fragments crunched underneath Slick Pick's work boots, and he scuffed them toward a wall, not wanting anyone to slip on the jagged little marbles. The rear of the armored truck came into view, its violated rear hatchway pried open and plundered.
"Thank fuck."
Slick Pick waved the guys behind him to move ahead. 6 workers squeezed by, dragging lengths of heavy chains ending in hooks.
"Get in there," Slick Pick ordered.
1 man got down on his knees and rolled onto his back. The other fed him the hooks and chains, and his torso disappeared underneath the truck. Slick stood and watched, sweeping his light over the work and the dark ceiling above. Tons of rock and steel and cement hung suspended from...
what?
It could all come down any time. On cue, a wisp of gravel trickled from an overhead crack, spooking Slick Pick. You guys almost done? He asked nervously.
Hold on.
Jesus Christ, how long does it take to hook an axle?
The feet under the truck wormed about as the nearest worker looked into Slick Pick's light and said,
Takes time to do right, man. Do it right the first time, and we don't have to do it a second.
This is a fucking waste of time, Slick Pick muttered and sighed heavily,
his eyes darting about looking for signs of an inevitable cave-in. In Slick Pick's mind, what they were attempting was Giovanni's plan, so he should have to oversee hooking up the truck and pulling its armored ass out. There would be a minor collapse, but they could clear up that loose debris and be that much closer to the final entrance to the bunker. At least in theory. Slick Pick didn't think a backhoe had the power to pull that squared turnip out of the ground. A bulldozer maybe, but not a backhoe. The concrete and steel beams overhead had probably harpooned the front of the truck enough to keep it in place anyway, but Giovanni had Shovel's ear, and he thought using the backhoe would save time. Slick Pick wished they could have found a certified engineer in one of those little towns they'd captured, or even a handful of experienced miners, anyone who knew tunnels and could offer guidance instead of letting the blind follow the blind. The guy on his back wiggled out from underneath the truck.
All set. Let's get clear.
Slick Pick was all for that. He backed away from the truck, a dark hatch yawning open in a wall of rubble, and signaled his crew to pull out. They regrouped far behind the backhoe, placing a respectable distance between themselves and the truck, far enough to escape any potential danger from a bigger-than-expected collapse.
Eddie, Slick Pick yelled to the backhoe operator wearing a yellow toque. Yank on that fucker!
Showing only his back in the reinforced glass cab, Eddie answered with a thumbs up, and the backhoe's mighty engine roared to life. Chains rattled and snapped taut. The backhoe huffed with power, and Slick Pick watched the spinning yellow and red warning lights atop the cab, waiting for the rumble. The backhoe's engine growled loudly and pulled. The acrid smell of exhaust filled the tunnel, spewing back toward the opening 200 meters distant. Giovanni had already assured him there wasn't any risk of carbon monoxide poisoning, as the tunnel was big enough for air currents. But Slick Pick firmly believed old Gio often talked out of his asshole. The backhoe strained and spun its tires, sending up a drizzle of dust and pebbles. The ceiling shuddered and creaked loud enough to make Slick Pick raise his head in trepidation. The armored vehicle lurched a startling inch, then stopped, as if Whitecap refused to give up its chew toy. Warning lights flashed in a psychedelic rave, swirling within the tunnel confines. Eddie stepped on the backhoe's pedal, making the beast snarl. Its massive tires spun and squealed. The lengths of chains quivered from the force. Whitecap protested, shivering with a metallic gasp and a belch of debris, and the backhoe stumbled back, pulling the truck with it. Chunks of ceiling clattered off the truck's hood, falling in flashes through the dust clouds swirling in miasmic patterns. The ground jumped. A gust of bad air flushed the darkness like a whiff of decomposing meat clogged in the throat for far too long. It buffeted the figures standing behind the reversing backhoe, an expulsion of foulness terrible enough to cause even Slick Pick to stagger in retreat. People coughed, some retched. Slick Pick covered his nose and mouth, feeling as if he'd been forever contaminated. A spinning, tea-saucer-sized slab of concrete with edges as fine as a machete's swished by Slick Pick's face, close enough for him to damn near fudge his shorts. It crash-landed behind him, shattering like a valuable vase. Warning lights swirling hypnotically, the backhoe dragged the truck's crumpled shape back toward the mouth of the tunnel. Slick Pick and his people got out of its way, avoiding any deconstructive mishap. Once the truck had been cleared, Slick Pick coughed, grimaced, and aimed his flashlight into the resulting hole, reluctant to go anywhere near it. More beams joined his, all failing to penetrate the snaking, swirling embankment of dust.
Get ready, he called out. Guns up!
Weapons came up on either side of him, and Slick Pick stepped behind them. Then they waited. Seconds passed. The dust clouds settled and the ceiling whined, but nothing came forth from that whitened gloom.
Slabs of concrete fell to the pavement in rude, crackling slaps, startling the men at first, but even that slowed and stopped. But a whining from above, of fabricated sinews under great strain, grew in eerie pitch.
"I don't think we should be here," the man nearest to Slickpick muttered, the unease in his voice thick enough to choke him.
His attention focused on the ceiling. Slickpick agreed with him and drew breath, intent on ordering everyone back to the tunnel mouth, when the squeals of metal culminated in a final heart-stopping spanking of metal onto pavement. Another gout of dust blasted the people in the passageway, forcing more than a few to cringe away from the unexpected air current.
"The hell was that?" someone choked out.
Slickpick shook his head. "The ceiling over the truck. Partially caved in when we moved the rig, but the shit that had piled onto that ceiling finally pushed it all down, like the second layer of a flat cake."
"You think?"
"I guess."
"So we're okay now?"
Slickpick hesitated before answering.
"Ask me that again once we get some lights in there and see how much garbage fell. And how much we'll have to clear."
"Slick,"
one of the people gestured with his rifle pointing to the tunnel. Slickpick looked, hearing the scuffling of crushed stone, a carpet of pebbles being sifted through. He squinted, gasping at a renewed bubble of noxious air assaulting his person and making his eyes water, his sensibilities involuntarily revolting.
Air.
The mask he wore protected him from the worst of it, and he hated to imagine what he'd be sucking down without it. He composed himself until he could function and then squinted at the darkness. More crackling. Pieces of debris fell to the floor. Then, there. Illuminated in a billowing fog of dust, staggered forth a shadow, and a woman stepped into sight. A topless woman, her skin a septic gray. She oozed into the light with all the curiosity of a wary deer. The trouble was, the woman was missing both of her arms, and her left breast, which in the flashlight beams converging upon her permitted a glimpse of a kicked-in ribcage. Splintered bones staked a lung, not that it bothered her. She came forward almost daintily, muddy eyes searching, head raised as if catching a pleasing scent. Behind her, like dogs on their master's heels, other shapes materialized like ghosts in a wafting haze, some hunched over, some tall and imposing, some crawling. All were moaning. It had been a year and change since Slickpick had laid eyes on a zombie, let alone anything resembling the pack filtering out of the dark. His breath and heartbeat skipped from an anxious beat to a fearsome taiko drum chorus. Slickpick gasped and forgot the plan.
"Fire, fire, fire, fire!" he roared.
The guns thundered. Chapter 44. With Kali gone, Wallace mentally sighed and took stock of his inventory. One high-powered assault rifle with a scope, a nearly empty magazine, and five remaining full ones. With professional ease, he swapped out the magazine and his rifle and slapped in a full one. He scanned the brush, having a clear field of sight from the main gate all the way along the southern curve of the perimeter, noting the naked kill zone of about 30 meters from the tree line to the heavy coils of wire. He noticed the gaps missing in the chain-link fence about a half a kilometer away from the main gate and checkpoint. He couldn't fathom why they'd removed those fence sections. But he did see makeshift barricades about 10 meters back from the gaps and a pickup truck with three armed shitheads in the box. Another shithead sat behind the wheel. That wasn't the way he'd have done things. But then again, he didn't expect much from a bunch of goddamn civvies with guns. Knees and other assorted joints had cracked ominously when he dropped to the ground next to Kali. He thought he'd have to get all that checked out when everything was over, which brought on a short but grim chuckle. All over. A dire certainty had flooded him when Kali left him and descended the hill, that he was watching her walk away for the final time. His life was nearly done. Flashbacks blurred through his head, From his childhood dreams of serving his country to proving himself in basic training and graduating a punishing weeding-out program for the JTF-2, to conducting covert operations in some of the most deplorable and dangerous cesspools of the world, rescuing, combating enemies and genuine evil wearing human disguises, losing friends and companions, carrying on in their memory, right through to the end of the world and the zombie threat, marrying his wife in the bowels of Whitecap, gathering up the remnants of humanity for Pine Cove, to here. All that was coming to an end. Wallace thought about the past week, specifically after having dropped Gus and the other survivors off at Pine Cove. He and Collie had retreated to their cabin hideaway and completely missed the invasion force. They'd had other things going on at the time. Collie had gone into intervention mode and locked both of them inside until one of two things happened. He turned for good, or he got out of his self-defeating funk and thoughts of suicide. Wallace didn't turn. And he convinced Collie about giving up on his well-thought-out self-exiting plans. Or at least thought he convinced her. His wife was far more intelligent than he. She also convinced him that she still needed his transforming carcass, his words, not hers, every moment of the day. As long as he still functioned, she needed him. And as long as she still needed him, he'd delay his exit plan. For as long as he was mentally able to delay it. Wallace smiled then, remembering the softer tones she used when conveying her feelings for him, even in his altered state. Collie, he mused. Ever the paladin, always the motivator. She'd worked her sorceress magic over him, and Wallace had to admit that over the past few days, he hadn't felt any of the cursed urges belonging to the undead. He certainly hadn't gone as far as that one instance with Gus. Halfway through the previous night, however, things had changed. For the worse. He constantly stretched his jaws, popping his eardrums. When Collie asked him what was wrong, he'd reported the stiffening of his joints, but seemed fine otherwise. He didn't tell her that the smell of her skin was borderline intoxicating, stimulating a powerful urge to bite. He wanted to perhaps start on her neck. Just lean over, chomp down, and rip out great bloody mouthfuls, working his way up that strong curve to the berries of her earlobes, and... Wallace shook himself violently, popping his jaws again, and took 10 seconds to focus. Once he'd recovered, he took stock of his ammunition and stacked the extra magazines next to the spot where he'd be lying down. The rifle didn't have a bipod, but that wasn't a big problem. He'd manage. The German rifle used a 5.56 cartridge and had a maximum range of around 700 meters, or the length of about 6 football fields and change. All good. The mouth of Whitecap's entry tunnel was easily inside that range, and he didn't think he'd be shooting that far. The trailers, small office building, and vehicles were all within 300 meters, and there wasn't a breeze in the least. He located the selector switch just above the grip and thumbed it to single fire with an ominous click. Having done all that, he climbed to his feet and stepped back to a tree where he'd hidden the pressure mine he'd discovered on the way up the hill. Landmines had been banned well before the turn of the century, but in the defense of Whitecap, against the threat of being overrun by dead things, the base commanders ordered several improvised explosive devices, or IEDs, to be placed in the woods surrounding Whitecap. The one Wallace had found, affectionately called a beanbag and about the size of a small sofa cushion, was a no-brainer to set up. One switch activated the device, then all it took was someone to step on and step off to detonate. Wallace recognized the coded black ink lettering of Gaz Plo and knew the weapon contained a sizable amount of liquid explosive, more than enough to do the job. There was no way on God's green earth he was going to leave to his wife to do that job. No way was she going to come back and find him staggering about brainless with an insatiable appetite. No fucking way. He placed the beanbag on the dead foliage of the hill, on a small rise suspiciously molded to fit his very plane. He leaned over the explosive and activated it, and when a red light chirped, he paused before lowering himself onto the device, centering it underneath his abdomen. Wallace lay there, aware of the deadly ordnance nestling at his core, eyes darting left and right, and didn't dare move off the device. He counted to five, shrugged mentally, and pulled his rifle into his arms, resting it on the small rise. His back was arched a bit uncomfortably, but what the hell? He was protected, had a relatively clear field of fire, and discovered he was in a wrath of God kind of mood. The scope fitted his eye, and he peered through, scanning left and right, until he arrived at the point in the fence where he expected Collie to make her insertion. Then he panned a little to the left and spotted four targets. A mild convulsion overtook him, followed by that familiar, insatiable craving welling up in his gullet and brain like bad gas. He suppressed it with effort. After winning that little battle, he realized that if he'd shaken too much, enough to take pressure off the beanbag, well, game over. Wallace stretched open his jaws, longing to bite into something, anything. The feeling quivered along his spine and thrummed into his facial muscles like wires dangerously close to overloading.
"Come on, baby girl," he projected mentally. "Daddy doesn't have much time left."
Wild grass and flowers sagged with melting frost as Collie descended the hill and made her way to the tree line. She stayed low, utilizing the ample foliage, scanning ahead and staying aware of the chain fence on her left. Bushes scratched at her camouflage jacket, but she ignored them. Behind the coils of razor wire, fencing and gaps in the buildings, vehicles and containers, people moved with purpose. All seemed well that morning, which suited Collie's purpose. She approached the gaps in the mesh fence and collapsed onto the frigid earth. She peeked through the underbrush and spied a pickup with three masked civvy gunmen in the back. They were watching the area where Collie intended to make her insertion.
"Nothing is ever easy," she thought as she looked around.
There wasn't anything she could do. Not with a band of open territory filled with razor wire. She blinked and noticed a lump that interested her greatly. A dead black bear lay tangled in the coils of razor wire. The animal had gotten painfully caught and had probably been gunned down. No one had bothered to pull it out of the wire. It lay across the loops about 20 feet away from the gap in the fence. Collie wasn't complaining. The unmistakable rattle of gunfire interrupted her thoughts, coming from the direction of the mountain and freezing her. The civvies in the pickup heard it as well. The three in the box turned away, listening to the clatter, before one slapped the roof. The engine started up, and in 10 seconds the gap was left unguarded. The pickup sped off around the corner of an unhooked trailer and disappeared from sight, but Collie sensed the industrial demeanor of the camp had just changed. She got to her feet and bounded through the brush, emerging and aiming for the dead bear. Being suddenly in the open felt threatening. The animal had been a beast, about 9 feet long, and died across the inner and outer coils of razor wire. Collie used its great size as a stepping stone, bounded over the defensive measure, recovered, and chugged onward to the gash in the fence. In seconds, her feet slapped concrete and she ran toward the nearest trailer. Shouts and the roar of engines ruined the peace. Once she reached the trailer's door, she yanked it open. The burst of gunfire jerked Shovel out of his morning funk and pulled him to the picture window. Giovanni appeared next to him. Outside, people had dropped what they were doing and looked in wonder toward Whitecap. Figures spilled from the tunnel mouth, running and firing in uncoordinated bursts, and generally pissing Shovel off.
"God damn fucking idiots," he grumbled, and reached for his submachine gun hanging from a wall peg. "Didn't we fucking drill for this?"
"We did," Giovanni said in an equally offended tone.
"And there they are, blasting like a bunch of fucking 5-year-olds playing cowboys, clogging up that tunnel. They'll sure as shit be the ones clearing that mess up."
Shovel turned away from the window and moved toward the door.
"Come on, then. Let's get to that minigun before one of our retards accidentally mows us all down.
The zombies lumbered into a bullet storm. Slickpick's people sprayed instead of aiming. The flashlight beams jumped and jiggled like spotlights coming unhinged because of an earthquake. Rarely did anyone focus on ahead, and any training Slickpick's crew had was quickly forgotten.
"The heads, goddammit! Shoot the fucking heads!" Slickpick screamed over the sky-splitting jackhammering of the German rifles.
Unbreathing chests got stitched up in explosive patterns, flinging corpses back into the surge of bodies pushing forward. Arms exploded off shoulders, faces burst apart with startled jumps. One zombie, an emaciated kid with upturned eyes, actually charged the firing line. A lengthy burst of gunfire destroyed the corpse's legs in an inky spray. The kid fell but continued crawling until someone emptied a magazine into its head, bouncing the figure off the floor as if it had landed on a snare drum. The living were so terrified and focused on the shifting rows of undead that they missed the masses oozing around the backhoe. Eddie locked his door when a charcoal palm slapped against it hard, scaring him to the brink of shitting himself. He stomped on the pedal and got the backhoe moving, but the armored truck hooked into a protrusion along the wall, twisted, and wouldn't budge another inch. Eddie shrieked and lowered the bucket in a desperate effort to shake the chains loose from the supporting arms, but they'd been fixed too securely. Eddie himself had done the job. Someone spotted a corpse crawling up the backhoe's ladder and blasted it off with a lengthy burst.
"Out! Out! Everyone out!"
Slickpick shouted above frantic reloading. That sent everyone scurrying for the tunnel mouth, leaving the unleashed horde fumbling about in that cavernous darkness, crawling forth upon machine-gunned limbs, heads resting crookedly on necks half shorn away by bullets. In the cab of the backhoe, a horrified Eddie saw the retreat and stomped on the gas pedal. The backhoe refused to do his bidding. He slammed the machine into its forward gear and plunged ahead. The bucket collected a writhing gaggle of doll-like limbs and torsos and drove them into the rear of the armored truck. The red and white whirling lights illuminated just enough to show the swell of bodies bursting in places, innards and bones sprouting in a viscous pulp. The zombies' deceased expressions didn't change even as the bucket mangled them. Eddie slapped the machine into reverse and backed up, ignoring how the fleshy clump fell. But the rig could not free itself from its treacherous anchor. Eddie's hands trembled on the controls. He jerked his head around, whimpering at the rising flood of heads, shoulders, and reaching arms surrounding the rig. Unchecked fright streaked a light show up and down his spine, nearly paralyzing him. Sweat glazed his skin, soaking his clothing. Eddie knew he was in a bad position and didn't want to become a fucked-up snack for the undead. He put the backhoe into drive and pushed forward again, the bucket heaving the zombies back. Tires squelched over a moist jam of skin and bones. The machine smashed into the truck, and Eddie reversed again, squashing a few zombies seeping into his retreating path. He glanced over his shoulder and saw the way partially clear.
Fucko, fucko!
Slickpick and the others had run out on him. Eddie was alone and cooped up in the cab like a slab of beef in a display case. Totally unacceptable. He shrugged off the seat buckles and clawed at the straps, bending a couple of fingernails back. He gripped the door handle, eyeing zombies struggling around the bucket.
"Now!"
Eddie threw open the door, swung himself outside, and hung off two rungs before jumping down. Moaning resonated off the tunnel walls, sounding like an off-key choir warming up. He ran, feeling fingers brush his neck. Eddie bolted for the tunnel entrance, not wanting to be eaten alive, and in his hurry, he slipped in that chunky stew covering the ground. His face and chest slammed into a mat of crushed bodies. Particles got into his eyes and mouth, and a knob of something invaded an ear. He barked a note of spastic dread and pushed off from the ground in an adrenaline-spiked push-up, feet already moving at full power. His hands slipped and he fell again. Eddie screamed as he struggled to regain his feet, his hands raking the offal of nightmares, close to puking from the smell alone. A line of zombies piled onto him.
Eddie fell onto his chest, the undead weight pressing him down into that awful decomposing mud under his chin. He screamed and shoved a hand into the neck of a corpse that appeared to wear its dentures on its lips. No, it had no lips. Eddie freaked, kicked into what felt like a vat of putrefying fat. His boot came half off, and he struggled even more as more bodies swarmed him, pulling on his workwear, grabbing his face, dripping, smiling, moaning, all while the backhoe's strobe lights whirled overhead like a psychedelic nightmare.
"Don't eat me, don't! No, no, no!"
Rancid skin muffled Eddie's cries then, and the zombies did exactly what he screamed for them not to do. They ate him alive. Chapter 45. Kali double-timed it through three trailers, peering inside each and discovering stores of food and drink, until she arrived at a single-story office house. People ran past her, heading for the ramp leading up to the tunnel entrance, weapons jiggling and clutched to their chests. That was fine with her. She went straight to the door and tried the knob. Locked. Kali didn't like to be locked out. She stepped back and kicked the door hard, hitting it just below the knob. The door flew open and bounced off the inside wall. Kali edged around the corner, leading with her rifle, and centered on a single woman dressed in a red sweater and jeans, her graying hair tied in a knot at the back of her head. "Freeze," Kali said, and the woman did exactly that as the shouting from White Cap's mouth seemed to level off. "You know anyone called Gus?" Kali asked her.
"What?"
"You fucking heard me, sister."
"Yes, yes. Gus. He's here. I know where he is."
Kali studied her, then the room. A doorway and short hall branched off, but with the paper-covered tables, cabinets, and medical charts, there was no mistaking the office's purpose.
"What's your name?"
"Maggie."
Kali smiled behind her mask. She'd just found the pecker checker.
"Best news I've heard this morning. Where's Gus?"
"They have him in an empty trailer 2 units down."
"Yeah?"
Kali glanced outside and counted off trailers, spying no guards. They'd probably joined the commotion coming from Whitecap.
"You're supposed to have some kids with you?"
Maggie blinked.
"Not here. This is only a clinic, but I know where."
"Where?"
"The other office just past Gus's trailer."
"You get them and bring them here?"
"There's a guard."
"Honey, anyone with an asshole is heading to that tunnel right now. We don't have much time. But if we both hustle, I'm pretty sure I can locate some wheels and drive out of here. You with me?"
Maggie's head almost fell off. She nodded so hard.
"Let's do it," Kali said.
Maggie hurried to the door, only to have Kali stop her with a hand. She peered left and right, then across an open stretch of cement to more trailers, motorhomes, and the beast of a dump truck on the other side.
"Okay, stay between me and the trailers," Kali ordered. "We go."
Shovel met Slick Pick and most of his gasping crew around the flatbed at the base of the ramp. Pickups with armed men and women gathered behind a thick wall of sandbags. They looked to him for leadership. Shovel didn't disappoint. He got into the thick of it right away.
"All right, calm the fuck down. Calm down and get behind those sandbags. Dig in and aim at whatever comes out of that hole, but don't none of you fire a single fucking shot. You wait until I tell you to shoot. Got that?"
With anxious affirmatives, those wielding guns settled in behind the wall and prepared themselves.
"Giovanni, get up there and fire up the mini. You hold your shit until I say so."
Giovanni nodded, bearded jawline set and grim, and climbed up onto the platform. Two others piled onto the flatbed in support. Shovel whirled upon Slick Pick with an expression demanding explanation.
"We pulled that truck out and they fucking dropped in from the ceiling," Slick Pick babbled. "They fucking dropped in, and all that stirred up dust and shit fucking creeped me out, and I told the guys to fire, and we did, but that didn't stop them. We shot the living batshit out of them unbreathing bastards, but only a few went down, so I got everyone out like I was supposed to. Eddie couldn't get clear of the backhoe and freaked out. Tried to fucking rodeo bang his way out of there, but he couldn't get clear. He couldn't get clear."
Shovel swung a hateful glare to the smoking mouth of Whitecap and waited as the sounds of weapons being locked and loaded filled the air.
Eddie's dead, Shovel declared. Get your shit tight and get ready for the slaughter.
He racked the slide on his submachine gun for emphasis and jerked his head in the direction Slickpick should scamper off to. Slickpick bolted.
Dickless, Shovel hissed, and turned to meet the forbidding countenance of the mountain called Nolan, already suited up as if he might have gone to bed in his gear.
The big man carried his axe, and his silver face gleamed in the gauzy daylight.
You stay around me, Shovel commanded and got a nod. That was all Shovel needed. How you doing, Geo? Shovel shouted and stepped to the side of the flatbed, looking up toward the minigun and the two-person crew ready to swap out ammo boxes.
Ready to fuck people up, Giovanni replied.
All right, you sorry-assed sons of bitches, Shovel barked at the people behind the sandbagged wall. Even the new recruits huddled nearby, which was good. One more time. You wait until the minigun opens up. You do not fire. You prematurely squeeze your trigger finger, and I swear to goddamn I'll stick my size 11 up your crusty hole and wipe my toes on your ass. Clear?
They were, and they voiced it.
All right, Shovel said, and set his attention on Whitecap's mouth. Like the man said, we get ready to fuck some folks up.
As if they'd heard their introduction, figures emerged from the darkness of the tunnel mouth, dribbling forth into daylight. A whole lot of people. They were only 40 or so meters away, but the morbid glee at seeing all that fresh, pulsating meat at the bottom of the ramp was unmistakable. There were soldiers in full but wrecked battle rattle, women in dresses, and kids in summer clothing. Men and women wore lab coats, formal suits, and leisure wear. All looked as if they'd spent a very long time under the earth. All looked famished. They were a veritable blood and gut-soaked parade of unholy might, where shriveled streamers of organic matter dragged behind the owners, where portions of faces had been bitten off for decoration.
Jesus, someone said aloud, saying it for everyone.
How many we estimate were in there? Giovanni called down from the minigun, sounding positively rock solid. 600 or 700, Shovel answered, not quite sharing his confidence, but trying to at least fake it.
The trouble was that 600 or 700 seemed like a lot more in reality than an off-the-cuff discussion around the security of a table. From his concealed perch on the hillside, Wallace watched. He divided his attention between Collie and the forces gathering behind the line of sandbags at the base of the ramp. At a glance, he suspected whoever was trusted with a gun had one. All aimed at the river of corpses that flowed into daylight. The advancing dead made Wallace smile with cadaverous mirth. Did he want to deal with shambling meatbags or the thinking living? He screwed the scope deeper against his eye socket and took careful aim at a head. Easiest fucking decision he'd made all week. Shovel and his group watched in horrified awe as the mob lumbered down the ramp toward them. Without any concern for the poised minigun, the undead marched on. Shovel believed every last one of them sons of bitches was smiling. The sound of their relentless approach became frightening, nerve-grating. The chilling mesh of famished voices, bare skin shuffles, and boot stomps was relentless. He looked toward Giovanni, and his second-in-command's expression froze somewhere between collected and grossed out. Giovanni caught Shovel's eye, straightened his back, and cocked his head just as it exploded as if under pressure. Blood and brain matter drizzled the two accompanying men as Giovanni's headless body crumpled back onto the flatbed. Speckles dotted Shovel, who stood shaking in shocked disbelief. Then he heard the shot. But by then, the whole of his militia opened up on the zombies, lighting up the line in a barrage of angry fireworks. Chapter 46. The barrage of gunfire made Six stop packing a loaded syringe into a carrying case and listen with interest. He glanced at the door of his new motorhome, only just inhabited, and went to the living area, where a window faced the inner ring of gathered trailers and offices.
Spying nothing, he tried to angle himself to see farther north, past the general quarters and the towering cat truck. Then he glimpsed the flash and smoke of a gun battle. Six straightened and considered the engagement. Then he considered his orders. The orders stood. Besides, Shovel had the mini up at that end. Any fight would be finished by that lead-spewing beast. Sick put the syringe in a carrying pack and zipped it up, depositing it in a leg pocket. He turned away from the window but froze, catching movement between the gaps of trailers across the way. That flutter made him stop and squint, willing whatever it might be to reveal itself. And it did. Six eyes widened at the sight. Collie and Maggie rounded a corner of a trailer and moved quickly between units, sprinting through the gaps. The automatic fire freaked Maggie out a bit, and Collie had to hold on to her arm for a grounding effect.
"Don't worry," she said close to the doctor's ears. "We pick up Gus and then the kids, okay?"
That seemed to do the trick. Maggie took a deep breath and pointed to the next trailer over.
"You sure?" Collie asked.
She nodded she was.
"No guards."
But Collie figured everyone might be at the ramp with the bullets zinging overhead. That didn't concern her. Phase two was extracting Gus, and she was nearing completion. They jogged to the trailer, and Collie took a moment to undo the chains wrapped around the door handles.
"You stay out here and keep watch, okay?" Collie instructed her. "Anyone asks, you just say you're being careful and heading over to see how the kids are doing. Got it?"
Fearfully, Maggie pressed herself up against the trailer and nodded.
"We're out of here in a minute,"
Collie assured her, and yanked on the chain, letting it puddle on the cement in a noisy rattle. She pulled down the folded steps underneath the bumper, opened one door, and charged inside. The gunfire didn't sound so bad inside the empty trailer.
"Gus?"
Collie asked the gloom, waiting for her eyes to adjust. She lifted her rifle, ready if needed, and slowly proceeded.
"Gus, you in here?"
The sky roiled and thundered, and Gus thought a tsunami might charge into sight, a tidal wave from which nobody could escape, and the only thing left to do would be to stand and wait for the water to hit. The captain laughed at his unease, which didn't sit well with him.
"That's not very fucking nice," Gus scolded him. "I'm freaking out here."
"Don't be worried," the captain said. "Help is on the..."
His face paled, his mustache drooping. Gus noticed the change.
"What?"
He lurched forward, wondering if the old guy was having a heart attack. The captain regarded Gus, alarm flaring in his eyes.
"You must wake up now."
No sooner had he finished the sentence than Gus thought he heard the voice of a woman coming from down the beach. The voice was Collie's.
"Collie?"
Hearing her name through the shadows of the trailer put a smile on her face. She hurried ahead toward the far end, scanning the shadows from behind her upraised rifle.
"That you, babe?"
But Gus didn't answer. The shape of a white frame rested on the floor, and on that, Collie realized was a body, one that stirred and flopped over onto its back.
"Gus,"
he answered with a grunt. Smiling under her mask, Collie dropped to a knee at the mattress's edge and gripped a shoulder. Gus groaned again. She rattled him before pulling on an arm, noticing how he was nursing a bottle of what might have been booze.
"You okay, Gussie? Huh? How you doing?"
"Collie?"
"It's me."
She pulled him to a sitting position. His head rolled stupidly on his shoulders, mouth open wide enough to gulp down flies. She placed her rifle against the wall and gripped his face, pulling it in close and studying the tiny flecks of light residing therein.
"Are you fucking high?"
Collie blurted in amazed contempt.
"Uh-huh."
"Jesus Christ. How the hell did you... All right, we're leaving this place. Can you move?"
Gus's head lolled on his shoulders.
"Sick."
"You think you're gonna puke?"
"No."
"Don't shit yourself. Please don't shit yourself."
"Sick."
"Got that part.
Just hold it, okay? Clench. Tighten up every sphincter you got.
Then, in a display of physical and mental might, forcing his rubbery limbs to obey his will, Gus lifted a finger and dropped it, still utterly shit-faced. Collie shifted into a crouch and took a deep breath, knowing she'd have to toss Gus over her shoulders to get him out of there, not something she wanted to do. But she could drop him in the office when they reached the kids. Then she heard something. A whimper. Collie snatched up her rifle and whirled, seeing the rectangular doorway at the back of the trailer and identifying Maggie's outline from the shoulders up. A shadow peeked out from behind her.
Not a shadow, Collie corrected herself. Some bastard wearing a ski mask.
Let her go and I'll let you live, Collie commanded, and walked toward the frame of daylight.
Stop, Maggie blurted, barely heard above the continuous gunfire. He says stop or he'll...
Her voice failed her for 2 seconds. Then,
he'll blow my head off.
Collie stopped but didn't lower her weapon.
He says drop the rifle.
The bastard stood directly behind Maggie, a sliver if that, not presenting a clear shot in the least. Collie could shoot anyway, quickly killing the doctor and the man behind her, but she didn't want to do that either. The doctor was the most important person on base. The doctor was gold. Would he shoot her? She was worth too much to them all. Then again, Collie knew firsthand plenty of crazies were about. Grinding her teeth, she sniffed and slowly placed the rifle at her feet. She wouldn't take that chance. Not with Maggie's life.
He says to kick it forward.
Collie complied, and the weapon slid forward.
He says further.
Screwing up her lips, Collie walked to the rifle and reluctantly did just that, sending the firearm skidding past the halfway point of the trailer.
Now the side piece. Pinch and toss it.
Collie complied.
He says to step back, to the back wall.
Lifting her hands, she prepared to duck the hail of bullets soon to come and did as told.
Sick, Gus repeated weakly, turning his head in the direction of the doorway.
Jesus, Collie fumed. Give it a fucking break.
Then it hit her. Gus wasn't sick at all. Chapter 47. Wallace's bullet struck home with spectacular results, and after plugging the first target on the minigun, he trained his sights on the next dingbat with balls enough to try to use the weapon. People scurried along the line, and he recognized a few of the faces crouched and fidgeting as the ones with guns opened up on the closing front. The trouble with handing a civvy a military-grade weapon is that they could be trained, even trained well. But until they were in a combat situation in which the enemy was returning fire and their friends were dying around them, you couldn't depend on their morale holding up. It was Wallace's intention to break them. He lined up the second target, a guy with a shaven scalp marveling over the dead man at his feet with no head. Wallace placed the red dot of his scope over the chest of the man, relaxed, realizing he didn't have to exhale, and squeezed the trigger. Boom! Brass ejected to Wallace's right as the bullet tore a hole through the road savage's chest, jerking the man off the flatbed as if he'd been hooked from behind.
Two.
Wallace took aim at one along the sandbag line.
There.
One hairy putz was waving his rifle back and forth, emptying his magazine into the horde. Wallace let that one live. A woman, her hair in a ponytail reaching her waist, remained steady under pressure. Wallace smoothly lined her up and fired, punching a bullet through her shoulder blades and lifting her up and over the sandbags.
Three.
That shot caused a ripple effect. The minions next to the woman started freaking out, screaming, and other heads along the defensive measure took stock of the kill. Wallace drew a bead on one guy near the end of the sandbags, still unaware of anything amiss in all the noise, and squeezed. The impact smashed the shooter away from the wall and into the legs of a nearby companion. That shot really stirred them up, like kicking an anthill. The cutthroats started looking around, not paying attention to the zombies crawling over the recently more permanently dead. A furry fuck of a man started bawling orders, even stepping up to the wall while directing the last guy on the flatbed to grab the mini. Wallace aimed at the leader, intending to pop that noise-making cherry and truly invoke chaos. A surge of mind-shattering hunger lanced through Wallace then, causing him to look away from the scope and claw the earth, raking up fallen leaves. Hunger. It erupted from his core and drove hooks of craving into his brain, demanding sustenance. It practically commanded his limbs into abandoning his position to wade down into that scrimmage and dig into whatever was breathing. Daylight became a stinging whiteout. A buzzing field of static, and he shied away from it. In the darkness, he summoned Kali, seeking shelter in her laugh, strength in her smile. But a rising hiss like leaves skittering across asphalt flooded his ears, shredding all memories, all sound. Wallace placed his forehead to the ground and popped his jaws. He chewed into the earth and spat out foliage and dirt. The urge to feed receded, but only for a moment. Then a second wave of hunger hammered into his core, splintering and almost breaking his resolve. Wallace gasped, realizing his heart wasn't beating anymore, and in its place, a black hole was revolving voraciously, sucking on his mind. Wallace dug in, refusing to leave, actually whimpering under the mental pressure, feeling the steel plates of his conscience and his resolve buckling, warping. Tentacles, slick and black, wormed out of the whirling cavity where his heart once resided, and Wallace knew if they reached his mind, he would cease to be. He needed a distraction. So he gnashed into the nearest thing to him, biting off the index finger of his left hand, and when that went down, he chewed off his middle finger.
"Aim your fucking shots!"
Shovel roared at his panicked forces, dividing his attention between the zombies and the sniper, picking them off one at a time.
"Shoot the head! If you can't get the head, shoot the legs, then the head!"
"There's a sniper!"
someone shouted back, and as one, every head turned toward Shovel. Some of the new folks, staying close to the ground, bolted, and Shovel whirled and gunned them down. After dispensing that punishment, he aimed at the recruits, promising a similar fate for anyone else who broke away.
"Get on that mini,"
Shovel barked at the third man on the flatbed, who cowered on the other side. A silver-headed Nolan moved on him, grabbing the guy by the back of his uniform and throwing his unwilling ass onto the platform.
"Who's shooting at us?"
a woman screamed.
"Never you mind that," Shovel yelled back. "I'll take care of that. You take care of them."
Shovel stepped up to his people crouching behind the sandbags, ignoring the bleeding dead littering the cement.
"Stop spraying your fucking shots. Aim and shoot. Aim and shoot. Do it, you goddamn dummies."
To show what he meant, Shovel shouldered his machine gun and blew the heads off three zombies not 20 feet away. One of them wore a combat helmet, and the metallic twang of the ricochet sizzled heavenward. That caught his minions' attention. Shovel lined up the face of the undead soldier and put a decisive bullet through it, dropping the undead in a heap.
"Like that!"
Shovel waved his weapon as he retreated.
"Do it like that!"
Lesson learned, they took to it in earnest, and a cutting hail of lead slashed into the advancing front, decimating the corpses. Chests and heads exploded violently, sending bodies earthward. Some skulls backed up on their shoulders while others had their midsections shredded to gristly ribbons.
"That's it! Do it! Do it!"
Shovel encouraged them, shifting his attention to the land and hills beyond the trailers, searching for that sniper, and very much hoping he'd get his hands on him. Wallace came to with a deep-throated humming in his ears. The second thing he noticed were the oozing stumps on his left hand.
Jesus.
The thought buzzed through his head along with that incessant mechanical whine filling the air. Wallace swallowed, feeling a lump sink into his gullet. He forced that ugly sensation from his mind and regarded Whitecap as hot recognition flashed through him. Dragonfire was flashing from the minigun's rotating barrels, shredding Whitecap's zombies in a dazzling display of destruction, its one-note song blaring through the valley and mountains. Appalled at the swath of devastation, Wallace fumbled for his rifle. Chapter 48. The wall stopped Collie from backing up farther, and she readied herself to dive and flip the mattress Gus had been sleeping on once Six started firing. However, the masked man standing behind Maggie surprised Collie. He slammed Maggie's head into the closed door, and the doctor crumpled from sight. Then, holding a pistol on Collie, he nimbly pulled himself into the trailer, daylight framing him. Then he advanced without so much as a creak.
Sick, Gus muttered repeatedly, introducing the newcomer.
Sick. I know, babe, Collie whispered.
That quieted Gus. Sick approached them, and when he reached Collie's rifle, he kicked it back toward the open door as if clearing the dirt from a batter's box. He did the same for her sidearm. That completed, he walked toward them and stopped within 10 feet of Gus. While gunfire crackled outside the trailer, the masked man sized Collie up. She studied him in turn, noting the dark combat fatigues. He wore a black mask like herself, but in this pack of apocalyptic wasteland hell pups, a balaclava meant nothing. Sick, however, carried himself a little differently.
He's had training.
All thoughts sped from her mind then as Six struck a duelist's pose and aimed his pistol at Gus. Collie licked her lips, willing the man to come a little closer, thinking of the combat knife in her shin sheath. A little less space was all she needed to end him. But Six surprised her again. With machine gun fire intensifying beyond the metal walls, he relinquished his aimed pistol and tossed it far away, back toward the daylight filling the open doorway. Amazed, Collie relaxed just a fraction more.
"The hell you up to?" she asked in wary puzzlement.
Sick didn't reply. Instead, he reached down and slipped out his bowie knife, revealing it inch by gleaming inch, the sparse light transforming the blade into something sorcerous, frightening. He turned it one way, and then the other, making sure Collie saw it before dropping back into a fighter stance, flipping the weapon to an underhand grip. Collie met Gus's drugged gaze for a second.
"A knife fight is the last thing you want to get into."
He remembered the conversation, evident in his fearful expression. And that was true, Collie knew from experience. But as God above is her witness, evil radiated off this masked freak like heat from a furnace. Little bastard drew his knife as though he was in a porno. Lord only knew how many people he'd killed with that blade, and no doubt Sick got off on it. He was a certified crazy, Collie realized. One of the few who had probably rejoiced when civilization collapsed. With dramatic grace, she reached down and unsheathed her knife, pointed it at her foe, and extended her left hand as a guard. Gus moaned at her intentions, drawing her attention. Collie winked at him, and went forth to kill one nimble psycho. As she walked toward him, Sick dropped back, smoothly switching up his stance while practice-punching the air. Collie performed no such theatrics. She'd been born loose and ready to fuck the enemy up. From behind her extended hand and raised knife, Collie slipped into her own combative groove, aware of the walls.
"Let's see what you got, boy," she whispered.
Sick attacked, flashing forward with an adder's speed. He flicked his buoy out in an expert weave, slicing the space Collie had occupied only a microsecond earlier. She countered just as quickly, thrusting her hand toward his face while her knife stabbed for a backbone. Sick darted to the side and brought his knife hand down across Collie's arm, slapping it away in a bruising connection. She responded in an instant, reading his intentions perfectly, and cracked an elbow across Sick's jaw, driving him back.
she pursued, stabbing for his gut once again and meaning to drive her steel into his heart, but Sick kicked out her knee in a crippling flash of pain, forcing the joint to buckle. Kali collapsed onto her back and caught her enemy's descending knife in a knot of forearms, stopping the weapon not an inch below her throat. There they gazed into each other's narrow eyes, grunting and pressing. She gripped a wrist and twisted it hard to snap it, but he rolled with the attack and tumbled away toward Gus. Kali scrambled to her feet, wincing at her knee, just as Six sprang up like a twisted jack-in-the-box. They circled each other for a moment, composing themselves, analyzing each other like doctors of a different, more sinister science. Their knives gleamed. Both breathed hard, chests heaving from the short but meaningful clash, but neither backed away. Kali lunged, stabbing, turning it into a backhand slash, cutting cloth and air, punching with her free hand before initiating her own combination of thrusts, open-hand strikes and slashes, jacking up the combat's tempo. Sick evaded the knife, blocked or slapped away the more uncomfortable punches, and circled away from her before unexpectedly charging back in. Kali didn't retreat, and for mesmerizing seconds they stood toe to toe, blades tinkling, hands and elbows blurring forward, blocking and striking with the rapid fury of a muffled snare drum. They ducked and weaved, probed and feinted before stabbing, all powered by quick intakes of air and short puffs of breath. With an uncharacteristic bark, Sick retreated from two scything sweeps of Kali's combat knife before stabbing for a heart. Kali swung out of the way like a door caught in a windstorm and smashed her palm into his cheek, snapping his head back. She slashed for his throat, but Sick blocked her arm in an evil display of speed. They broke away from each other. Machine guns continued to blaze outside. Kali realized she was near the doorway. Somewhere behind her at her feet was a collection of firearms.
"Wishing you kept that Glock now, right?"
Kali huffed, eyes fixed on her opponent. Sick didn't reply, his shoulders heaving. He stalked her, loose as a boxer, poised to strike if given the opportunity, whirling his knife in a defensive figure eight meant to frighten and hypnotize. Kali didn't go for that. Didn't go for the guns either. She went for his throat. He blocked the attack, but her forward momentum backed him up into a wall. They mashed together like similar pieces in different machines, grunting now, ferocious in their exchanges. He cut her above the eye. She slashed the outside of a thigh. He uppercut, zipping a deep kiss through mask and skin, licking her chin to the bone. She elbowed him hard to the head, three close-quarter strikes that squished his nose to one side. He got a free hand around the back of her neck and attempted to pull her down onto his knife tip, but she stopped the ascending buoy with her forearm, the point deflecting off bone and parting cloth around her shoulder. He pushed off the wall, arms enveloping her, slashing her lower back as he went, lifting her off her feet and charging forward. Kali rained down a pair of punishing pommel strikes to his neck before slamming against the trailer wall,